This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. It's episode 293. I'm your host, Seth Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the NFL wire site from the USA Today family of sites. Seth Cox, who normally is with us, is not with us tonight. He just happens to be traveling with the holidays. So instead of Seth, we have a treat for you guys. Is one of my guys, Alex Sutton, who comes from, who is one of the contributors to my site from CardsWire. He joins us to talk about the Cardinals. So this is an all CardsWire talk show tonight. So we don't have anything with Revenge of the Birds. Normally, Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com is the co-host tonight, though recording on a Tuesday night as we normally do, is Alex Sutton. Alex, welcome to the show. We're glad to have you. You're not replacing Seth, but we'll let you come on every once in a while.
Yeah, I'm very glad to be here. Thank you so much.
So obviously, we've got a lot to talk about because we went through a roller coaster of emotions over the weekend with the Cardinals losing badly to the 49ers. It was only 20-12 was the final score, but it was a complete domination pretty much by the San Francisco 49ers in that game. And then we felt like, oh, we have to rely on the Bears. But then we have a new playoff scenario, so we're back in control of these things. And in this edition of the show, we're going to be talking playoffs. We're going to be talking Rams. We're going to look back to the game against San Francisco. We're going to talk about what exactly went wrong in that game. There are some injury concerns. Kyler Murray was staying on the ground at the end of the game. People talking about what maybe Chris Trevler is going to be the quarterback in Week 17. Then we'll get into playoff scenarios because the Cardinals are still alive and have actually as an ideal setting as you can want for Week 17. If they manage to get into the playoffs, we'll talk about some of the potential matchups that they're going to have. And then finally, we will look at the matchup, the critical Week 17 game against the LA Rams, a game that honestly was we're going to talk about. The Cardinals have no excuse to lose this weekend. Everything is set up for them nicely to make it to the postseason. But let's start with the San Francisco game. Alex, let's start with you. What went wrong in that game? Because you don't have Nick Mullins, who wasn't good. So you've got C.J. Beathard. You've got Jeff Wilson. So no Raheem Mostert. No Deebo Samuel. You've got no Richard Sherman. No Jaquiski Tartt. No Jimmy Ward. No Nick Bosa. Heck, they lost a couple of their interior guys, too. How do you lose that game?
Well, and I think the thing with Mullins and Beathard is Mullins gives you more turnovers, but the Cardinals with worse teams in the past have beat Beathard. And probably the same caliber of roster given the injuries that they've had this year. And to me, it was just a complete lack of effort. We talked about this off screen that, you know, maybe they underestimated. They saw the reports, no Raheem Mostert, you know, Jeff Wilson, C.J. Beathard, and then even guys in the secondary where you're like, oh, like this is a team that they 100% should beat. I think they were favored by almost seven. I think it was just a complete lack of effort. You didn't see like killer creative plays from Shanahan that were just like, wow, what a great play. It was more, you know, guys weren't hustling. It was a very almost Lions game-esque, but against even, I would argue, a worse roster at the moment.
Right. The Detroit game, like you look at some of the things, the offense played well, the defense played well, they played well enough to win. But the three turnovers really did them in. But against San Francisco now, offensively, yards, I mean, if you look at what they were doing in their losing streak, they struggled offensively. They were like, I saw a graphic in one of the games that they were in that three-game losing streak ranked 30th in the league of offense in the offense. So this is a team that was top five, even number one offense for much of the year. And they didn't get more than 314 yards. They were over 350 yards against the 49ers. So they were moving the ball, but they were, you know, they had the turnover in the end zone, which really hurt them. It was really, really damaging because they get that touchdown. And I think what happens is things turn around. I think a little bit of momentum, but I can't, I can't think it's anything more than the, because as surprised as Cliff Kingsbury was saying, and the way he reacted both Sunday and Monday when he talked to the media, it felt like they got into their own heads and thought that this was going to be an easier game, when you know you can't do that in divisional games. The 49ers had already lost to them earlier in the year. This is a prideful team that had, that were winning by 10 in the Super Bowl just a year ago. And so while it is C.J. Beathard, while it is Jeff Wilson, the Cardinals know Jeff Wilson. He was the one that put away the game away against them in the second San Francisco game a year ago when he beat Chandler Jones on that pass play. Jeff Wilson can go. And it's one of those cases. Kyle Shanahan, he is, you know, say what you want to say about Cliff Kingsbury, I don't think there's anyone better in the running game. And he gets that from his dad. Like, you see those Denver Broncos teams in the 90s. It didn't matter who you had back there. They were putting up big numbers. And we've seen that time and time again from the 49ers, where Mostert comes out of nowhere to be a big producer. And then Mostert goes down. Sure, they've got Tevin Coleman, who's been banged up most of the year, Jerick McKinnon, but it's Jeff Wilson, just a no-name guy who just comes out of nowhere, 183 yards, and I think they just didn't have an answer for that running game, and without the answer to the running game, everything else clicked. And you look at the stats, it was backs and tight ends. They shut down the receivers. Well, I think it was two completions to receivers the entire game, two. There were, like, Beathard had 13 pass completions. 11 of them went to backs and tight ends. George Kittle's return was really helpful to them offensively. But just the inability to cover the backs out of the backfield and just to stop the run just really did them in, because they're a defense. And Vance Joseph talks about and even this week, this last week leading up to the game, he talked about the need to manage the run game. You have to manage the run game and stop the passing game. They didn't manage the run game at all, and so they were in third and short. And so they weren't able to pressure Beathard, because he's a guy that will hold on to the ball too long and turn, you know, take sacks, get turnovers. And it just was backwards from the beginning of the game defensively.
Well, you bring up that this nobody running back named Jeff Wilson comes onto the field. He's certainly not a nobody to the Cardinals and their fans and the media, obviously the game winner last year. But they even ran that same exact play, the angle route, to the same end zone. Obviously, yes. Different things, but like the exact same
play. It was the
same
one that Isaiah Simmons got beaten week one with by Raheem Mostert. And Mostert tweeted about it during the game. He tweeted about it in the game. Like, I remember that play. Eyeballs emoji.
Right, right. And like Jeff Wilson, I mean, props to him. He was definitely breaking. He was tough to bring down. He was always falling forward for a yard or two. But if you go back and watch some of the lanes that he had, where, you know, we know the interior of the line is, you know, depleted. Jordan Phillips, you obviously on the edge, Chandler Jones is out. But like they were like non-effort level gaps for Jeff Wilson, to where like I might have even been able to gain a yard. I don't know. But like some of those, thank God or thank goodness we had, you know, Buda Baker to make some ankle tackles, but they were into the secondary on 10, 15 yard runs multiple times. I mean, that is an effort thing. I'm not even sure if that's a preparation thing. You know, the kind of zone runs the Shanahan family, as we talked about, like to call, you know what they're going to do. And say what you want about Jordan Hicks, and particularly in this case, Devondre Campbell, he's a good run stopper. Despite their injuries, I say they weren't out personnel. It was just wide open lanes the entire time, and just the Niners wanted it more, even though they were eliminated. I mean, I don't have much else to say about that, but that's pretty much how they controlled the game from the start.
And offensively, it's come to the point where somebody else has to make a play other than Kyler. Kyler can't be relied on to do everything, especially if teams are able to contain the run game. You have to make plays for him. So they didn't produce points, but we had, I'm not going to call it a drop, but it's a DeAndre Hopkins drop. That's a play he normally makes in the end zone. He's made multiple times. It's a tough play. but DeAndre Hopkins didn't come up with a play in the end zone. Christian Kirk had a ball come off his fingertips in the back of the end zone. Now, the pass was just a little bit high.
And he was going to get blasted, too. I mean,
Dan Arnold drops a pass. He should have called in a pass. He got hit hard, but he should have hauled in a pass for like about 45 yards. So there were plays that needed to be made that just his players didn't, his receivers didn't make. And if they make those, it's a completely different ball game, because the throw to Hopkins was on target. It was a tough play. It was defended well. Jason Verrett did a great job against Hopkins, but that should be a touchdown. Kirk hopefully could come down with that. That's a touchdown. You get into field goal range with Dan Arnold. Now, I will say that the end zone interception, that was a lazy throw by Kyler, because he threw it off his back foot. If he steps into that, Kirk is open. If he gets it past the defender, that's a touchdown, but he threw it off his back foot, which we've seen him. He's really good about doing that. That one was poor technique. So he did make some mistake, and they just, Kenyon Drake couldn't get going in the running game. But what we've seen is, like, there was no chance. Those defenders were, like, the offensive line was getting no push at all.
Yeah, I mean, you talked about Kyler with his accuracy on even back foot throws. He did it on the first drive of the game to Kirk, like almost the same play, same sideline. On, I believe it was a third and short. He just, you know, back foot lobbed it right, you know, into the breadbasket. It was good coverage. I think this is the theme that we were seeing with this team, maybe that we could have predicted, and then a lot of us did, that when Hopkins isn't having a signature game, I actually like stood up and did the touchdown motion when Hop got his hands on that ball in the end zone we were talking about, because he did it last week, even on the same end zone. You expect him every time the ball touches his hands. He had one off of his hands. I immediately thought that was going to be a completion too. But back to the point is that when Hopkins doesn't have 100+, and when Kyler isn't having an elite game, you look at the stretch where there were a couple games at midseason in particular where they could have had the one seed. I think it was the Miami week where if they won, I believe Seattle lost to Buffalo that week. Don't quote me on that, but I believe they would have been the one seed had they beat Miami that week. Something like that. And you look at those games where people were like, oh, well, here come the Cardinals. I mean, this was Kyler having 300+ yards, Sunday Night Football. Granted, the Seahawks defense was very much struggling at that point, but nonetheless, a signature game. And then you look at Miami, the number one ranked scoring defense, one of the best defenses in the league, went crazy. Buffalo, you know, even taking the Hail Mary out of account, a pretty good game. And as soon as, you know, you had the shoulder injury in Seattle, and you had that little, that stretch of games where the offense wasn't elite, then they lost. I mean, they don't have, and there's certainly a conversation to be had. I think the general consensus this offseason will be fix the defense, but where you need those players, doesn't matter. Like, Kyler Murray is a Pro Bowl quarterback. He's great, but every human playing the quarterback position is going to have those rougher games or gonna need some help at some point. And like you were talking about, Kenyon Drake in the off interior, I'm not gonna put the last game on Drake. That was, he was clear as day, no push, of course, but those guys couldn't help him. When Hopkins wasn't coming out, I think Hopkins was hurting after halftime, but like, there's just no one else right now that can on a consistent basis. And Johnny over at Revenge of the Birds brought this up. There's nobody who on those screen passes they love to call so much besides Hopkins and Chase Edmonds, who they design a lot of those screens to Kirk and Fitz. That first tackle, they're going down. You know, there's no one to provide right now that spark play to help Kyler.
That is basically what's happening. Then we have stuff coming at the end of the game, which gives us some concern getting to next week or this weekend. Coming up next on the Rise Up Secret Podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the way. Let's move on and talk about some of the injury concerns, mainly Kyler Murray. He might be hurt. That's coming up next on Rise Up Secret. We're back on the Rise Up Secret Podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Kyler Murray goes down on the last offensive play of the game. He has his leg looked at. They say it's a leg whip. He doesn't talk to the media after the game because he's being evaluated. That was a scary moment, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of sit there in disbelief after the fourth down incompletion to Hopkins, because you're like, they just lost that game. And not that you felt like they were going to come back, you know, they were down 8 points, no touchdowns. But so at first you're in the shock of that they just lost to this 49ers practice squad. But then you see Kyler on his back and doing sort of like a motion, like, I need help, I need help. And I mean, that's just, you don't want to immediately go to bad thoughts, but then you, at the time, it felt like the season was over. We didn't necessarily know that, given that that was played on Saturday, we didn't know that they would have this opportunity against the Rams. But not only did you feel like season over, especially because he was hurt, and if they had to win in next week, that they weren't going to do it without Kyler, and they won't. You know, you saw, what if this is a knee injury, a serious, because I don't remember exactly, he was pointing to his, something like that. You kind of knew it was his leg, and you're like, oh no, you know.
Well, yeah, my first thought was, oh, like, because the way the broadcast team was talking, it was like, oh, please don't be the ACL. I mean, Joe Burrow, who went down with a terrible knee injury, we saw it happen to Deshaun Watson his rookie year. Go all the way back to RG3 when he had his knee injury. It really kind of derailed his career. And you're like, oh. And I remember the Carson Palmer ACL. It was, oh, my gosh. You're like, and he knew it. I mean, he basically knew it in the moment. But Kyler goes down, you're like, please don't be the knee. Please don't be the knee. Then he goes off the field, is over, but there's the talk of the knee injury. You know, he was supposed to address reporters after the game. He didn't come out, and it was because he was being evaluated. But there is, I'll tell you, I think we're on the same page here. I think the Cardinals are milking this injury thing a little bit because they can. I don't think there's much there.
I mean, why wouldn't you want to take a couple hours of Sean McVay's time every day to go back and watch CFL tape on Chris Streveler, you know, take away from, you know, watching the starting offense right now. But, you know, look, Kyler Murray is the ultimate competitor. He did not lose until last year. Welcome to Arizona. And this is his first chance in, you know, despite how this year has gone at times and how last year went, second year in the NFL as a starting quarterback, if you have the chance to make the playoffs, you know, there are guys like, you know, well, Carson Palmer, you know, we brought him up where he made it in early, but he didn't get his playoff win until he was 36 or 37. Kyler Murray has the chance at age 23 to go get in the playoffs and then get a playoff win. I mean, in my opinion, he would have to be in a wheelchair with two knee braces, you know, two torn, blown out knees or something for him to not play. He loves football. Here's the biggest part of this is, if they had an elite roster, which there are, I would argue that they have elite players, you know, Hopkins, they would have had Chandler Jones, but this is a good roster. But if they had a kind of team like a 49ers last year, where they had, you know, a run game that could get it done, where they had just a top tier, top five defense, then maybe Murray, if he was, that's the kind of thing where you go, okay, maybe they can get this done. But Murray knows, as we just talked about, that if he is not lighting it up, then the team is pretty average.
Right. And when you look back at that final play, that fourth down pass, it's incomplete to DeAndre Hopkins. And now Kyler did get hit, well, sort of hit. You watch the film, you can tell he went down. He's actually really good at protecting himself. It didn't look any different than any other hit that he's ever taken. And I believe he stayed on the ground more than, like, some people have used not so flattering language about him online, whether it's a hurt ego. It's like he was, you know, they already had turned the ball over on downs. He stayed on the ground. It was frustration. I'm convinced that if that pass is complete, he doesn't stay on the ground. Well, one, because unless, if Hop doesn't get out of bounds, if Hop goes out of bounds, then it doesn't matter, but it potentially would lead to a 10-second runoff, which they didn't have. That, yes, it was kind of hurt ego. It was kind of frustration. The realization they just lost to a, like you've called it, a practice squad team. And he kind of milked it. Because if you notice, the trainers, obviously, that's their job. When a player stays on the ground, they go and check him out. when he walked off the field, he wasn't limping. In fact, now Kyler walks with kind of limpy gait to him. It's kind of interesting. You watch him walk off the field. It's almost looks like, to me, a guy that hurts all the time. And I'm sure that's not the case. He's young. He's super athletic. But that's just the way he walks when he walks off the field. And I think Cliff Kingsbury at this point is just playing it coy. Because what we know about Cliff Kingsbury, he likes to be completely vague about every injury every time. Like, he wouldn't even go into detail about the Dennis Gardeck injury. Like, nah, I'll leave that to the team trainer to talk about, who doesn't talk to anybody.
Yeah.
I'm not concerned about Kyler Murray's injury. The first injury report's going to come out Wednesday. I would bet he's going to be limited.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if he's limited Wednesday and maybe Thursday. But limited, that means something less than. So if they give Chris Streveler a few extra reps to give Kyler some rest, that's limited. They might play that game. I think Friday he'll be a full participant. I don't think he will be questionable entering the game. The injury I'm actually really concerned with is Chase Edmonds, because his flexibility in the run and pass game are really important to this offense, since you're not getting plays from receivers. DJ Foster in that role is not the same thing. And the fact that Chase came out, like, he was already dealing with a knee and an ankle, then he has the hip. He was completely changed out of his pads in the second half. I am worried about that injury, because we know that Drake can handle a full load. But Edmonds adds, unless they put Drake in that same position where he flexes out and he goes out wide, and I don't think he's as comfortable running those routes as Chase is, that really changes the dynamic of the Cardinals offense.
Well, we talked about, and I did say earlier that, you know, when Kyler and Hop aren't having a career day, it feels like the Cardinals offense is inefficient. That does not include Chase Edmonds in this conversation. Chase Edmonds deserves all the credit in the world. He's just, you know, obviously Drake, like you said, is okay to be the bell cow, but Edmonds just if you're going to throw a horizontal screen, which we complain about, throw it to Edmonds. I mean, he's multiple times thrown it or broke two tackles. He's got this move where the defender tries to wrap him up and he kind of like shrugs him off. It's almost like a spin move, but like he gets hit and then he keeps going. He would be a huge loss. And you would hope that even if he doesn't play or if he's limited with snaps, and then he can, if they do win the game, that he can return to the playoffs, because he is one of those few spark kind of guys. And on another injury front, Dre Kirkpatrick last week was active and he was on the sideline, but they opted to play Kevin Peterson. He obviously wasn't. I don't know why he would be active, because you would think maybe play him in an emergency role. And when you're down 20-12 to that Niner team, I think that's emergency. But, you know, with playoffs on the line. But he did post on his Instagram story something. It was vague, but it was something along the lines of, I think he was in the training room. He was like, I'm sick of this. I'm back next week. Something like that. So you got to take that with a grain of salt. He might have been frustrated, but
my take on Kirkpatrick, he didn't practice all week. And so I think he was active in the sense that he was, might have been healthy enough to play, because he's been dealing with injuries for the last month. Like, he missed the Miami game. But, like, every week he's on the injury report for a hamstring or a knee or a calf. And last week it was hamstring and calf. So he's been dealing with being nicked up. And now, it's one of two things. And I think either one is valid. They knew that they weren't going to have to go three corners a whole lot. They only played a nickel 21 snaps. And so with Dre not 100%, knowing that San Francisco doesn't go with many three wide sets, you go with Murphy playing that two role, and you let Kirkpatrick rest a week. Kirkpatrick's going to be really important this week, especially if he can be healthy enough to play, because Kevin Peterson, Seth loves the potential of Peterson. He just hasn't kind of broken out. Like, he's got some good cover skills, but there's been some ugly plays that we've seen from him this year. And I think it was like, it was either one of two things. It was just, he was healthy enough to play, but didn't practice enough to really trust him in the game plan. And it gives you a more physical Murphy playing outside, and you don't necessarily need all three to give Kevin Peterson playing time. Or two, you might be seeing a transition of Murphy to be corner two. That also could be, like, I'm interested to see what happens this week because when they first signed Kirkpatrick, they eased him into the lineup. And so it was Murphy playing every snap and Kirkpatrick coming in nickel. Now, Byron would slide over to the nickel. But then it eventually was Dre playing every snap and Byron only coming in for nickel to play just the one role instead of the two. It's going to be interesting to see if this week, if Kirkpatrick goes back to that full role or if Murphy has emerged enough to play both.
Well, and yeah, I mean, fans have given, especially on social media, fans have given Kirkpatrick a tough time, particularly the two Seattle games. I mean, he was playing very hurt against Tyler Lockett when he dropped, I don't know, 55 fantasy points or something like that. And then the starting the fight in the Thursday Night Football when they had finally stopped Russell Wilson and looked like, I mean, a stop where you could go take the lead on offense. But this defense is at its best when it's playing press man. We saw it in the Giants game and the Giants are the Giants, but their receiving core, it's not bad. And when they're playing press coverage, I mean, I could be wrong, but I don't believe outside of, I believe it was Lockett on Peterson in the first Sunday Night Football or the Sunday Night Football game against Seattle. He was the one getting beat deep. I don't think we've seen Kirkpatrick like get beat on one play touchdowns. He'll give up some underneath stuff, but he's been steady for the team. And I think obviously in my opinion, the sort of sliding Byron over at times, I think given the value of an outside corner, especially with your question marks with Peterson in the offseason, that's a much more valuable football position than a slot corner in terms of market value and things like that. So I would think that they're trying to see what he can do in both phases there. But when you have Peterson playing as close to what Peterson was as you can, and you have Kirkpatrick playing press man, and you have Murphy, who's the most physical. And you saw him break up that screen against the Eagles. It's a solid group, but I think that they would like Murphy to be a future outside corner if he could. Obviously you don't want to force that, but that's sort of my take on that.
Coming on next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. It's time to talk playoffs. We're going to talk about the scenario and how, in fact, I think it's probably the best way possible they got this scenario. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk some playoffs. The Cardinals entered Week 16 in control of their playoff destiny. They needed a win to stay ahead of the Bears, even though the Bears have the tiebreak over them. And the loss to the 49ers was really deflating because then you're like, well, then the Bears have to lose to the Jaguars, which we knew wasn't going to happen. Just because, one, Jacksonville's bad. Two, they've locked up the number one seed. They were going to put Mike Glennon at quarterback. I mean, come on. It was all lined up. And Chicago's motivated. But then, I don't know how Kyle Odegaard came up with it. I don't know if it's something he was already aware of. We realize that there was a scenario that could play out that would give the Cardinals new life. And that would be Seattle beating the Rams, which would then clinch the division for Seattle and then create a win-and-you're-in scenario for the Cardinals in Week 17. That is perfect. Now, because even if they'd won, even without, so if Seattle loses, the Cardinals could beat the Rams and still not make the postseason if Chicago beats Green Bay. Now, things have played out perfectly because I think Green Bay is going to play and I think they're going to beat the crap out of the Bears. And so I think the Cardinals winning against the Rams would have made the playoffs anyway. But in this scenario, it's better because there is no need to worry about what the Bears are doing, all except for one tiny scenario. The only way the Cardinals get in is if they win. That's pretty much it. They win and they're in. They lose, they're out. That's that clear. Now, they could tie and the Bears could lose and they still get in. But regardless, it's a perfect scenario. They win, they go 9-7, and they're in. If the Rams lose, they're not even necessarily bumped. So if Chicago loses, the Rams still get in. So you could end up with three NFC West teams in the playoffs. And I'll say this. I was wholeheartedly, for one day, a Seattle Seahawks fan. And I'm not ashamed of that, because it created exactly it's the perfect scenario. Like, I can't think of a better scenario other than the Cardinals locking up a playoff spot last week, which they should have done, but they couldn't have. They couldn't have locked it up last week. They should have. This gives them perfectly. It gives them the opportunity to go make the playoffs. And so basically week 17 is the playoffs already. So we get to see what Kyler Murray's made of. We get to see what that roster's made of. And we're going to talk about it is the fact that they're going to do it against a depleted Rams team. Now, what were your takes? Like, how did you feel after the loss and then after the Seahawks win?
Saturday was a really depleting day because, I mean, in my head, it's definitely still a fan of the team, if you will. You in your mind when they kick off for the first time in a game, even in this last pretty disappointing month, you still, like, in your heart, imagine them as that team that was dropping 30-40, like, not obviously not 40, but like 35 points a game, and like they were at midseason. But, you know, the last couple of games has been hit to reality that they haven't been that. But ironically, my dad's a Seahawks fan. So I told him, I was like, this is your day where I will, you know, I will sit here, I will root. And I found myself genuinely cheering. You know, I had that game going primarily, and particularly the fade pass to Hollister to sort of seal the game. I mean, Goff's thumb was bent out of shape. I think I stood up. I mean, I don't remember, but it was like life had been, like, reinserted into the team. Regardless of what happened, there's still the negative people online that are like, oh, how are you going to even beat the Rams if you just lost to the 49ers? It felt like, okay, we're not done, you know, because it was feeling very disappointing that given the year that everyone has had, some more worse than others, obviously with the pandemic, for the Cardinals fans that have dealt with that, I mean, they would have been great to make the playoffs. And they were, there was no right way they were not going to at one point, 6-3, 5-2. So it was another chance. And I think just watching the players in their conferences and just the sort of vibe around the team, whether they win or lose, they could certainly lose. They haven't proven us they can beat the Rams, but we will get, I'm pretty confident in saying this, a much better effort. If they lose, it will be because they lost to a better football team, and that will be determined by the game. But I don't think it will be because, like, against the 49ers, they looked like they didn't care.
Right. And I like the scenario because – and here's the thing. I'm not one of those, like – I don't care if the Cardinals get embarrassed. Like, I care if the Cardinals get embarrassed in the playoffs. I think it's super important for them, ideally for them to take the next step, to be into the postseason and to taste it and to be in that scenario. And I think part of that, here's the thing, San Francisco is battle-tested in that sense, and they went into that game serious. They did not give up. And I really respect the 49ers for how they approached that. That said, I love the scenario. I'm glad that, like, even if the Cardinals won this weekend, I would have hated to have been focused on the Bears game at the same time. Yeah. Because how brutally disappointing would it be for them to beat the Rams for the first time since 2016, only to see the Bears clinch the playoffs anyway? That would be so disappointing. And of course, even more so, with some of those losses where you're like, why'd you lose to the Panthers, to the Lions, to the Dolphins, to the to the Patriots and to the freaking 49ers. Then you start going back and you just lament those losses, when now, while you still can lament those losses, it just comes down to, when you had a must-win game, did you win it? And if you don't, then you really lament that game instead of looking back like you won what you were supposed to at the end, only to have it taken away from you by another team.
I think if you came up to any of us at the start of the season, coming off of a 5-win year, 3-win the year before, and you said, okay, would you accept this? Would you take week 17 win and you're in, without you don't even have to tell me the opponent? I would tell you yes, because like you said, whether they get into the playoffs, I mean, we'll talk about this next, but the three teams that they could play, depending on how, you know, Sunday goes, if they make it, are very, very good teams. Now, granted, every playoff team is going to be very good, but these three are like very playoff veteran. But the chance to not even just get in and taste the playoffs, like you said, but to play a team that has done it, you know, that has done it a lot. You know, maybe not, I think they each have a Super Bowl win in the last decade, but they're always in the playoffs if they're healthy, to see what it's like to line up against that. I think, especially for the young players that, you know, are a part of the future. You got guys like Hopkins has been there, you know, he knows, but like, especially for a guy like, you know, Kyler Murray, Christian Kirk, people like that. I mean, it's such a great opportunity. I can't stress that enough. And then, you know, maybe if they make it in and actually win a playoff game, I mean, hey, you know, not trying to create too many parallels here, but you got 2-9-7 Cardinals teams, Super Bowl at Raymond James Stadium. You know, there's a lot from their Super Bowl. There's a lot that obviously that's a stretch and more of a fan take than anything. But, you know, jokes aside, it's really all you can ask for.
Let's talk about those matchups, though. So coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, let's talk about the three potential ways. Because the Cardinals might be the 6th seed, they might be the 7th seed, and they could face either the Saints, Packers, or Seahawks. What's that going to look like against each one? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We're going to talk about, well, let's just go with the scenario where the Cardinals do beat the Rams on Sunday and they make it into the postseason. They face one of three very talented teams. They could either end up playing, and it doesn't even depend necessarily where they see, because the top seed is still up for grabs. Like, the top three seeds are still very much in play in week 17. And so the Cardinals could end up playing the Seahawks for a third time this season. They could play the New Orleans Saints in New Orleans. Obviously, these are all going to be road games. Or also, they might have to go to Lambeau Field and play the Packers. Honestly, that's tough. I mean, that's a tough setup. I wouldn't have it any other way. Sure, you'd be nice to be the Tampa Bay Bucks and to get to play the NFC East winner. But... And I know there's a number, there's a group of fans who would prefer them not to make the playoffs than to get embarrassed. And I am not in that category, because getting in the playoffs is getting into the playoffs. I don't care. Like, the Cardinals need this experience. That's what you do this for. You play to win the game. You want to be in that scenario. Because then you're part, Phoenix fans, look at the Suns for the last decade. If you could get it as the number 8 seed and get swept in the first round, hey, that's a stepping stone. That's what I want this to be. So Alex has done a little bit of homework when it comes to the different matchups. Obviously, the most familiar one is the Seahawks. And if there's one thing that we know, that the Cardinals can beat the Seahawks, and can do it in Seattle. Even though they lost earlier this year, that was a winnable game. I wrote about this after they lost 28-21. It really came down to two plays. It came down to two plays. And if you want to break it down, it's even just one play. And that was the Drake Kirkpatrick personal foul penalty. They had the Seahawks dead to rights. They stopped him. And so if they kick the field goal and make it, they're only down by four in that case. Or they're only down by three instead. They're only down by three. And the Cardinals were in field goal range. Now, we know that Zane Gonzalez, this and that. So they should have been able to take that game to overtime. But then on top of that, the J.R. Sweezy holding penalty in the end zone. How do you get beat that bad? Basically, those two plays made the difference in the game. The Cardinals would have had the chance to win the game or tie the game with a field goal. And they were in field goal range already. And so we know that the Cardinals, even when they didn't play well, they beat Seattle once. They could have beaten them again if it weren't two plays, two selfish kind of bad plays. So obviously Seattle is a team that you're afraid of, but still familiar with, while at the same time, Drew Brees and the Saints, and you've got Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. Tell us what you've got, Alex.
So first, I'd like to preface real quick. You said that making the playoffs is a stepping stone for teams. And immediately what thought into my head was making the playoffs in 2015 and then not happening again. The difference here is this is a young team, you know, outside of maybe Fitz and Andy Lee. But, you know, that team, had the team been 10 years younger, you know, Palmer and Arians in particular, they're probably still kicking and in the playoffs. So for the younger players, this is crucial. But okay, so your three teams, the Packers, the Seahawks, and Saints. I think I would not disagree with you, but in a way where you said that the Cardinals are afraid of the Seahawks, I think it's more the Cardinals respect the Seahawks. They know that they can beat them, but they know that if they don't show up, then they will lose. I mean, you can't give Russ those opportunities. So in terms of matchups, okay. So obviously, I think every team, the AFC has been better this year. The AFC has been insane. But all these NFC teams, 1-7, you know, right now, if you include Bears, Cardinals, Rams, and that, obviously only two of those three will make it. Every team has been flawed. Now, I think the scariest thing about Green Bay is early on they lost really bad the Tampa Bay Bucks, and the biggest thing for them, you saw a glaring weakness in run defense. Okay, they did a very, very nice job against Derrick Henry on Sunday. Now, a lot of that was being up by two possessions for until it got out of hand, but Henry got, I had him on my fantasy team, so I know Henry got plenty of first half touches. And they contained him. I mean, it was a 4 yard, maybe five. I think he had one 10 yard run early on. So they might have that fixed. Their glaring weakness from when they were losing games early might be fixed. And, you know, for a Cardinals team who has really struggled to run the ball, not great. Okay. And I have this in bold letters here. Who is going to guard Davante Adams? Now, I would love to see a matchup between, you know, prime Patrick Peterson of maybe 3+ years ago against Davante. But right now, I don't think they have the capabilities to stop him. I'm not saying that they couldn't win, but I'm thinking you're looking at least 100-yard touchdown game from Adams. And then if you stop him, then we got to stop Aaron Jones. And if you can't stop Jeff Wilson, how are you going to stop Aaron Jones? So without rambling, that's what makes the Seahawks tough, or the Packers tough. And they also have somebody who, you know, I don't think anyone, it's very hard to shut down DeAndre Hopkins, but they have somebody who can probably do a pretty good job in Jair Alexander. And moving on, you look at the Saints. So the Saints, I would say, have been the most flawed of these three teams recently, but you said it. I don't care how old Drew Brees is. I don't want to go and play at Mercedes-Benz Superdome, albeit like without 70,000 fans. Drew Brees knows how to beat you in the playoffs. Now, while the Saints themselves have had some playoff mishaps in the last couple of years, Alvin Kamara. They said that Michael Thomas would probably return for the playoffs. So I don't know if that will be a first round, but he got the better of Pat last year in their matchup. The Saints, yes, are very flawed, but they just have so much playoff veteran experience and explosiveness between Kamara, Thomas, Hill. That would be tough. And of course, you pretty much.
Now with the Saints in particular, mm-hmm. if there is one thing that the Cardinals struggle with, and it seems to be the attacking 3-4 defense, I think the Saints offense is kryptonite for that. Because yeah. not only did the Panthers picked it apart, and they run that same offense. New Orleans did it last year. But remember when the Bucs and Todd Bowles defense were killing it, then the Saints went and completely torched. So I think something about their offensive scheme is just kryptonite for a 3-4 attacking defense, like the Cardinals play with Vance Joseph, like the Bucs play with Todd Bowles, because that scheme has been so hard for the Cardinals for the last several years.
I mean, and you have nobody better to run. I mean, the Panthers picked it apart with, albeit good receivers, but I mean, the Saints have it all. You have Hill and motions in the flats. You have a Hall of Fame quarterback. You have Michael Thomas. It's that quick passing game that can really, that really diced them up last year. Now, the only positive is Jalen Hurts, a very mobile quarterback, not as mobile as Kyler Murray, tore up that defense. Tore up is a bit of a strong word. He did enough. Granted, the Saints had to play Taysom Hill. The threat of Jalen Hurts, Miles Sanders, again on my fantasy team, so I know this all too well, had been bottled up with Carson Wentz because people knew that, you know, shut down Sanders, Wentz wasn't playing well. You know, the threat of Jalen Hurts' legs early when they got him 10-yard run here, 7-yard run here, opened up the entire offense against the Saints. So maybe the Cardinals could do that. I don't know. I mean, certainly they played him last year and Murray had an admirable game, I'd say, last year, given the talent he was working with. You know, you nailed it with the Seahawks. We know what they are. They know they can beat them. I would argue, and I'm curious to what you have to think about this. If you had to pick right now, you know, assuming they beat the Rams, you had to pick one, I think you pick Seattle.
I do, guaranteed. But they're also playing some really good football. Mm-hmm. I think right about the time that the Cardinals played them in Seattle is where things kind of turned around for them defensively. Now, granted, they lost Snacks Harrison for whatever reason that was, but Carlos Dunlap has really helped them become much more physical up front because that physicality was an issue up front. And they're running the ball really well, and they're playing good defense, which has allowed Russell Wilson to be more of the player that he was before. It actually makes that team better. Now, he was putting up video game numbers, like MVP numbers for the first half of the season. They're also the team that I fear the most in the postseason. They're the team I would rather face of the three, but they're also the team I fear the most because of the way they're playing right now. I think they are built to potentially be the team that comes out of the NFC.
I think if you're any team but the Cardinals or the Rams, if you are not an NFC West team who plays them twice a year, they are right up there with Green Bay in terms of, you know, I don't know who I would much rather least play. If the Cardinals didn't play them twice a year, I would not want anything to do with them. I still don't. But in the playoffs, you're not going to play a bad team, you know. I think
except the Dallas Cowboys if they win.
Maybe, but that would be a very Cardinals thing to lose that game if that happened. And you know, the biggest thing with Seattle is, you know, Russell Wilson showed us weeks up until pretty much the Thursday Night Football that if you let Russ cook and you let him drop back every play, he can do it. And so when he isn't asked to do it, you know, they can run the ball, play good defense. They are saving those best plays for crunch time. And that's why we see Russ come up so clutch is because he can do it. But when he doesn't have to do it every down, it's a different kind of scary from a defensive coordinator perspective. Now, I would argue, and you know, my dad being a Seahawks fan has expressed this frustration, when the defense clicked, and it has, the offense feels like it took a little bit of a step back. Now, they're still elite. I would definitely put them in that category, but if that team would be unbeatable if they were playing the offense they were, you know, up until the Cardinals played them first with the defense they're playing now. They are unbeatable, in my opinion. So, you know, you would hope that that would continue. Like you said, the Cardinals defense, while not a flashy performance, did enough on Thursday Night Football for the Cardinals to win. And that's how that game would have to be played, or would have to be played, without those mistakes and with hopefully a little bit better performance from the offense, with Murray now the shoulder injury behind him.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea podcast, the best hour Cardinals talk about. Let's move on. We're going to talk about their game this weekend, a game that they have to win and should win. Previewing the Rams. Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea podcast, LA Rams Cardinals preview. That's coming up next. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk about this game against the Rams. This is a team the Cardinals have not beaten since Sean McVay took over. However, no Jared Goff, no Daryl Henderson, maybe no Cam Akers, and it looks like it might not be Cooper Kupp as well. Goff broke his thumb. He just had surgery. Daryl Henderson, high ankle sprain, going to be on IR. Cam Akers still coming. There is a possibility he plays, and he might play because they don't have anyone else, but he will not be 100% on that high ankle sprain. Cooper Kupp on the COVID list. If it's only a close contact, he could potentially be activated Sunday morning, but he will not have been practicing at all. He will not have been in the facility. This is a team that offensively hasn't gotten it done the last 3 weeks overall, and now we'll be starting a guy who has never taken an NFL snap in an NFL regular season game in John Walford. Yeah, he played in the AAF. What do you expect to see from this Rams team offensively?
Well, Jared Goff, I think the pattern is he'll have a bad game and then he'll play the Cardinals the next week. I think it was he had a terrible game against the Niners, and he said like, oh, I love playing here in Arizona. Like, you know, Goff has been great. And you obviously, I think from a Cardinals franchise moving forward perspective, it's inexcusable to lose this game given what they did last week. You can't lose back-to-back to division opponents with backup quarterbacks. Now, my concern and what I pray that they don't do is write off John Wolford. Not because I'm watching tape and seeing, you know, Patrick Mahomes, but most of the time, when Goff has lit up the Cardinals defense, these aren't like tight window throws. These are bootlegs where either you have the running back at the first level, Tyler Higbee, the tight end at the second level, and then Woods in the third level of crossers or flats. Somebody has been wide open, and most NFL quarterbacks will make all three of those throws. So they have to first address scheme. I think against the Rams, they have played their absolute best football. Press man coverage, you know, blitzing. What they can't do is sit back and play soft zone against a backup quarterback. They didn't have the chance to get into their defensive personnel against the Niners because they were in third and one half the time. I think this is a game where you see the Rams defense really try to keep the Cardinal or the Rams offense in it. But I think this is a game where it ultimately comes down to Sean McVay, and they have not shown they can beat him.
It's true. If you look at the last few games, they've lost two in a row. They've lost, and then they're on the cusp of getting bumped from the playoffs, losing three. And they were 9-4 in the number one seed, and they were number one in the NFC West. And then they lost to the Jets, and then they lost to the Seahawks. But I want you to look at this defense that they've given up. They have not given up more than 208. So they haven't given up over 300 yards in offense in the last month. So even to the Seahawks, Seahawks only muster 292 yards of offense. The Jets beat them with 289. I don't know how. The Patriots, 220. The Cardinals, 232. Now, San Francisco put up 345, but then the week before that, a Tampa Bay Bucs team who is now, you know, playing really well, they held them to 251. In fact, if you go back over the last several, like, over the season, they gave up over 300 yards of offense in each of the first. In fact, it was over 350 yards. It was over 360 in the first 3 weeks of the season. They have only given up over 300 in three games since that point. And that includes they give up 295. They give up 108 to a – that was a bad Washington game. And so they are still – that defense has been very, very good. Now – it's been particularly good against the rush. They have only given up over 100 yards twice in the last 5 weeks. And if you look back, since they had a hard time stopping the run the first 4 weeks of the season, they have four games out of the last 12 where teams have gone over 100 yards. And here are some of those games: 38, 49, 55, 42. And then they gave up 92 to the Cardinals, but a lot of that was Kyler Murray. I believe Kenyon Drake went for 34 yards that game. They've just been very good overall. Like, that defense is stifling. And the Cardinals will defensively need to not mess things. They can't have letdowns like they did last week. There'll be no excuse. It's going to be either a banged up Cam Akers, Malcolm Brown, which is the type of runner that they don't have any problem stopping, or a dude named Xavier Jones. I've never heard of him. Obviously, you've got talent at outside receiver. You're still going to deal with Robert Woods. You still got to deal with Josh Reynolds. But Cooper Kupp, losing him is a game changer. Now, and you still have to deal with Tyler Higbee and Gerald Everett. But when it's Walford who's delivering the football, and it's while they trust him and they believe in the progress that he's made, Sean McVay made a point that other guys are going to have to step up, which means they're not going to, I mean, they need him to basically not make mistakes. And then the defense needs to be great. And this is where the Cardinals offense, which we've seen has picked apart some defenses that were good, they have to produce offensively. They have to be able to move the ball on the ground, at least some. They have to make plays for Kyler Murray. It's like, I think they need to get to 21 points. I think 20 points is probably enough to beat this Rams team this week, I think. But I still worry, because if that defense is fired up, Aaron Donald is otherworldly. Jalen Ramsey is a tough matchup. They are getting good much better linebacker play than we ever thought that they were going to have. This is a team that is just, it is built to play defense. Brandon Staley, their defensive coordinator, has really turned things around, taking them up a notch. Because with Wade Phillips, they were good. They kind of dropped off a little last year, but Brandon Staley has really taken them up another level.
I think this, you know, people can point, I've seen some fans say, oh, well, the Cardinals put up 28 points. Okay, that was a lot very late. One was off of a muffed punt where they basically just had to punch it in with Drake, which I believe, if I remember correctly, they struggled to do. The outside of the blown assignment on Dan Arnold to open the game, the Rams defense had dominated the Cardinals. And it was a similar the year before. You know, they came the last game of the season last year against the Rams. They played much better. The offense did. I do agree with you. I think the Cardinals defense will be motivated enough to hopefully not play the way they did last week in terms of stopping the run. So this does come down to the Cardinals offense and the Rams defense. And, you know, this I circle one thing. DeAndre Hopkins has to be Jalen Ramsey this time around. And I don't mean, you know, one cool one-handed catch or something like that. He has to consistently on clutch plays or explosive plays beat Ramsey, who I believe has been the best corner in football this year. You know, it might not be close. Hopkins has had some very good games against Ramsey in Houston when they were both in the AFC South. But they, you know, and I point to this, there's also a lot of Cardinals fans erupted at the DeAndre Hopkins route tree, particularly following the Rams games, where Cliff was trying to simplify the defense to where Hop was pretty much running 5 yard outs, curls, all to exclusively one side of the field. And very recently, they've moved him around a bunch. His Philadelphia wide receiver chart, they were motioning him, crossers.
They were doing that against LA. It's just that route tree that they showed was only his catches. That's the one thing I pointed that those were just his catches. They were moving. They played in the slot. But the truth is, in that game, because it got sideways fairly quickly, they threw the game plan and went 2 minute. And that's what happens when you go 2 minute. You're like, hop quickly. Yeah. Let him make plays.
You know, and yeah, thank you for that. You know, we know Hopkins can do it. Ramsey's been great. But we know from a DeAndre Hopkins versus Jalen Ramsey, you know, that we know that Hopkins can win. He has before. And you are going to play what I think has been the NFL's best defense this year. I know Miami deserves some discussion there and some other teams. But this, the difference in the Cardinals offense the first time they played them is going to be, and to beat them this time around, is going to be one or two plays. You're going to need that Hopkins fade to the end zone, or a, you know,
Kirk's
maybe
gotta catch that one in the back in the end zone.
Right.
Or Dan Arnold's gonna make that play down the field through their field goal range.
Right. And Hopkins having a much better day this time against Ramsey, I believe, is how if you can sort of get him going, maybe you can even get a Hopkins score early. Then I think you're set up for success.
Yeah, the Cardinals play so much better. It kind of goes against what's happened because they've had really good starts the last few weeks and have petered off. But defense, like, for what they need to do defensively, they need to get a lead. Because if you're going to have to put the game into John Wolford's arm, that's what you want to do. That's a win. So they need points early. They can't make mistakes. They can't turn the ball over. That's basic stuff about it. Like, don't turn the ball over, create turnovers. But it's going to be especially important since lately they've been able to force fumbles, but haven't been able to get. They've got to turn those into turnovers. They've got to turn those fumbles into and recover them. And I'm confident-ish. I'm confident in this game because this is a game you should win. I mean, there's no reason not to win with the personnel that they're going to be putting out there on offense. But at the same time, I'm super nervous.
Yeah.
Prediction. Now, obviously, you've got lots of matchups that we want to see, but I let's talk predictions. I think this is going to be a grind-out game, and the Cardinals will win this one 23-16. There'll be a lot of field goals.
You kind of took my numbers prediction.
Oh, no.
Close. None of these teams are going to hit 30. I don't think so. I do think the Cardinals will squeeze a win out of this. That's what I'll say in terms of predictions. You know, it's possible. I think if the Cardinals on the score sheet look like they won handily in any sense of the fashion, which it would be that the game was a very close game until like the last minute or something, like a quick rushing touchdown, something like that. I think the Cardinals will win a very nerve-wracking game. The cardiac cards will be in full effect. I think they know now that it's the last game of the season. I think you'll see the effort that we didn't see last week. And I was talking about this. I do think you will see a very nice couple of plays here and there from DeAndre Hopkins. I think he he's very prideful in his one-on-one matchups in particular. And two, you saw the frustration in him the last time there was a blatant PI, like in garbage time, and he was on the Ramsey hat on him and he was very upset. He was very frustrated the entire game. So I think Hopkins, maybe I'm just reading into future storylines or something, but I think Hopkins will do just enough to spark the offense. And that's it. I'll go, I don't know, like a 26 to 19, something like that. Ooh. Something like that.
I'm worried if Los Angeles scores 19 points in this game.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yes, sounds like we both feel confident-ish in a win. That's nervously what I'd like. Confident. I am nervous. Yeah. That's a great, nervously confident in a Cardinals win to make it to the postseason. Probably one and done, but I'm not like, as long as they get to the postseason, I had the Cardinals going 9-7, missing the postseason. So having them go 9-7 and make the postseason, that's a bonus. I think they're right on schedule. If they win this game, they're right on schedule. They lose this game, I think they are maybe like, they might be on schedule in their production, but especially if starting off that season at 5-2, it would be really disappointing to see them miss the playoffs ultimately. And so, nervously confident in how this game turns out. And honestly, because of how things have played out for the Rams, I kind of would rather the Rams make the playoffs than the Bears, because the Bears are, I mean, other than the fact that, well, if they sneak a win, then maybe we could play the Bears and beat them. But just to have this happened to the Rams in week 17, I don't know what it is. I dislike the Rams less than the Niners and the Seahawks, even though that they have given the Cardinals the most problems. To have a team who is playing as well as it would be nice to see them still sneak into the playoffs, and the Cardinals can be the sixth seed, they can be the seventh seed, and the Bears can just go away.
Go away, yeah.
And plus, it would be fantastic to have three NFC West teams in the playoffs, at least for this first year of having an extra playoff team.
Well, and knowing that you were able to make the playoffs despite that talent in the division this year is certainly something to not take lightly. I cautiously or confidently nervous is definitely the term. You start to go, okay, well, look at the personnel. You know, we got this. And then you kind of dwell on McVay.
Right.
Without looking at the past, you would say this is a win. But, you know, since 2016, so...
And with that, we will end this edition of the Rise of Sierra podcast. A big thanks to Alex Sutton for coming on to fill in for Seth, who is off traveling with his wife. And by all means, he should take that time. He needs to spend that time with his wife sometimes. But Alex might be back another time. I don't know. But Seth will definitely be back next week when we talk about, well, it's hopefully previewing a playoff game. If not, we will be the beginning of our off-season show. So with that, that's Alex Sutton. I'm Jess Root. We'll be back again next week with Seth. And thank you for listening. As always, go Cardinals. Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, rise up, Sea Red. Whoa!